There's still a lot we don't know about Rivian, like how many pre-orders it's received or how many vehicles it can make in Normal. But a new filing with the SEC is revealing lots of new information about the electric automaker's plans. That story is just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Sarah Nardi. We'll talk to Ryan Denham about Rivian's latest IPO filing. Plus, Miller Park Zoo's director Jay Tetzloff sheds his other job to focus on monkeys, snakes, tigers, and growth.
Kind of gives me a chance to kind of step back and be more visionary.
And in the debate over a 20-year-old healthcare right of conscience law, Senator Jason Barrickman sees bigger issues about COVID rulemaking. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal news update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Sarah Nardi. There's been a lot of news out of the Rivian plant in Normal lately. Production has begun on the pickup truck, and some customers are coming to Normal for test drives. And now the electric automaker is revealing new information about its business in an SEC filing. It's part of the effort to become a publicly traded company. Here to unpack what's in that filing is Ryan Denham, who's been covering Rivian for WGLT. Hey, Ryan.
Hello there.
So first off, what's this new filing all about?
So it's called an S-1 filing. It is just over 200 pages, which they dropped late on a Friday last week, which was a lot of fun to read through on a Friday night. but it is just a chock full of information about kind of where they stand, what they're planning, how their finances look. And it's all part of, ultimately, Rivian's plans to become a publicly traded company, which could happen as soon as toward the end of the year here.
Okay. And what are some of the most, because I'm not going to read it, what are some of the most important takeaways from this filing?
I read it for you, and you're welcome. So one of the big things is pre-order numbers. So we've all heard that they're taking pre-orders for their electric trucks and SUVs, but we didn't know how many. And now we do. It's about 48,000 trucks and SUVs across the country, folks have put in these pre-orders. We also now know kind of how many vehicles they might be able to produce. So in this filing, they say that they have capacity to produce about 150,000 vehicles in Normal per year, and that could jump up to 200,000 by 2023. Another little nugget in there I thought was interesting was it's kind of timeline related. You know, everybody knows that Amazon has hired Rivian to make 100,000 delivery vans.
Right.
Initially, that was going to be by 2030. So all of them are going to be on the road by 2030. But this filing says Rivian is anticipating delivering by 2025. So like 5 years faster than anticipated.
Yeah, that seems like a big deal. And I know it's been, you know, the topic of endless speculation. And now that we have this filing, what did we finally learn about Rivian's financial outlook?
Well, that they're spending lots of money. The company lost about $994 million in the first 6 months of 2021. They lost a full billion in 2020. Company says that it's expecting spending on capital expenditures to be about $8 billion through the end of 2023. That's not entirely a surprise. I don't even know if the word loss is the right word there because, you know, the company really doesn't have much revenue right now. It's taking a little bit from some of these pre-orders and those customers actually buy the vehicles. But the one thing that Rivian says about its finances that was notable in this filing is that, quote, we do not expect to be profitable for the foreseeable future as we invest in our business, build capacity, and ramp up operations.
Is that typical? Do companies usually say, hey, we're not about to make money for, and at any point in the foreseeable future, please invest?
Well, yeah, I think another kind of a comparable thing here is, as with all things with Rivian, is Tesla. They've been established for a long time, widely considered the leaders in electric vehicles. So they were founded, Tesla, in 2003, and Tesla didn't report its first full year profit until 2020, when it made $720 some million. So what is that, 16 years, 17 years without a profit? And then they made one. So waiting a while might be par for the course for this business.
It might sound not good reading through that filing, but maybe it is good, is it?
Well, the important part is not so much that it's good or bad, but that it's accurate. You know, the SEC does not like it when you lie to potential future stockholders. That's where legal trouble comes in. So right. whatever you do, make it honest, make it accurate. The whole section actually called risk factors. And it's like really, really candid stuff from Rivian to its potential future investors about like, here's the stuff that could knock us off track. Here's right. the bad stuff. One of them I'll mention here is that Rivian, discloses this itself, is that it is getting a significant amount of its revenue from one place, and that's Amazon. And what happens if that relationship goes sour? What if Amazon doesn't like the trucks after it gets right. a few thousand of them?
It's a lot of eggs in one basket.
Right. Another eggs in basket situation is Rivian is highly dependent on the services and reputation of one person, which is the founder and CEO of the company, RJ Scaringe. What happens if something takes him out of the mix for any number of reasons? Medical issues, whatever it may be. You don't want to speculate on that, but, it's a real thing. And then another, open-ended thing that we still don't know how it's going to shake out is unionization. The United Auto Workers represented Mitsubishi workers way back when it was a Mitsubishi plant. Could the Rivian workforce unionize? Rivian talks about this in the filing. It says, while there's no employees currently represented by a union, it's common in the auto industry, and that can lead to higher employee costs and operational restrictions.
All right, so what's next for Rivian?
Well, this initial public offering is expected to take place here by the end of 2021. Rivian is reportedly, according to Bloomberg, seeking a valuation of between $70 and $80 billion. So we'll see how things go at that point.
We'll see. That's Ryan Dunham, WGLT's content director, who's been covering Rivian for the past 3 years. You can find all of our Rivian coverage, including photos and video from our recent test drive at WGLT.org.
I'm WGLT financial contributor John Kim from Bloomington. My daily habit during the work week is my 6 cups of coffee and the leadoff. And that's really how I start my day to know what's going on in the community and around the world. I love the snapshot. I love that it's quick hits of things happening here in our community, in the state, around the nation, and some even global news. And it kind of frames what's happening around me. I love the connection of local programming, like Highway 309, I think is fantastic. I love music. I love all genres of music and just getting exposure to up-and-coming artists as well as old favorites. Popping on the radio is fantastic when I'm out for a drive. The other thing I love about WGLT and NPR is the national programming. Love 1A, love All Things Considered, love that national perspective. It's fantastic. I'm born and raised in Bloomington Normal, and I'm a big believer in supporting local. So local news, local reporting, locally supported sourcing of reliable and fair and balanced news is very important to me, especially in this day and age. The IVGLT is truly a local news source. It's not owned by any outside interests or by a news organization outside of our community. It's locally owned and supported, and I think it's one of the last bastions of journalism that is providing local news and local coverage. It's a great way to engage the community. It's a great feeling to know that my dollars are staying locally and supporting a local news source. We like to support a number of local causes and organizations, but this one is something I use on a daily basis that I rely upon, so I'm happy to be a financial contributor. I work for an employer that matches gifts, and it's been a great way to stretch our family's financial giving to WGLT, and I'd encourage other listeners who have that opportunity to explore that and continue supporting local radio. I'm WGLT financial contributor John Kim from Bloomington. Join the community that powers WGLT. Give now during the fall fund drive at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Sarah Nardi. A number of school districts have begun to use a 1998 state law known as the Healthcare Right of Conscience Act to fight against state-mandated COVID vaccinations or even mandated testing. A couple of unions have also supported the use of the law to preserve member choice for first responders. There is talk in the General Assembly of changing that law to bolster Governor Pritzker's executive orders. In this interview with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker, State Senator Jason Berrickman says he's not sure whether the effort will appear during the fall veto session. Berrickman says it's not just about required testing if people choose not to get the vaccine.
The issue that exists here, I think, is more fundamental, which is whatever these rules are in place, you could be for them or against them. How those rules come to fruition, I think, is really important. Right now, the rules that are in place are coming by executive order, primarily out of the Governor Pritzker. The legislature has really had almost no input or normal oversight that, you know, we do when you pass laws. And so I think the public would be better served if we would rely on the normal legislative process that's supposed to allow the public to have input. It allows people to take a vote. And then after that, you know, you win some, you lose some, but I think the public is more accepting of the outcome if they were allowed to participate in the process.
It's a tough vote, and it's a divisive issue, and if lawmakers can avoid it, some of them would like to avoid taking that vote.
I totally agree with you. However, that's the wrong approach. We're not elected to avoid the tough issues. We're elected to represent our constituents, and on this tough issue, no different, you know, I've tackled lots of tough issues over the years. The democracy, the representative government that we have suggests that our role is to make those choices. In the absence of that, I think you're going to continue to see a public who resists some of these orders. You're going to have a public who doesn't buy into them. And it's just going to continue the divide that Governor Pritzker and others say they want to, you know, avoid.
If it does come before the veto session, would you support strengthening or weakening the Right of Conscience Act?
Well, look, I approach every issue with an open mind. Now, I think there's a basis for the Right of Conscience Act, and I've been very open that I'm one who is, you know, concerned about governmental mandates, especially as they might pertain to individuals and to parents of young children. Those things concern me greatly. But to date, there's not been a proposal from Governor Pritzker on an amendment to that existing law. There's only been executive orders and rules coming out of ISB.
Although this certainly gets a lot of public heat, is it overblown in areas where there have been vaccine mandates and people end up resigning or threatening to resign over that mandate? It's something like less than 1% of people who actually say that, and less than that who actually do that. Is that significant enough to really worry about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we have to worry about it at any level, right? I mean, these are individuals, and these are individuals who are professing their individual rights and freedoms. I mean, I think whether it's one person or, you know, millions of people, individual rights are things that we need to stand for and fight for. The outcome of this, though, Charlie, too, I mean, it's impacting people's lives. The whole thing is getting thrown into the courts, who are going to ask judges to resolve it. It's creating chaos in the schools, where the schools are literally begging the administration for clarity on these rules. That frustrates the many very good people who are administrators, faculty, school board members, who are all trying to do their best to interpret what is being issued by executive order, because along the way they had no input, they had no say, and it's creating a very contentious environment in the schools.
State Senator Jason Berrickman spoke with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker. Berrickman says the Right of Conscience Act will no doubt be litigated too, though it will take time. The fall veto session is 6 days during the last 2 weeks in October. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. I'm Sarah Nardi with Jennifer Armstrong here for the Fall Fund Drive. Your contribution at WGLT.org will help fund all the local news you love on this station, including programs like our daily news magazine, Sound Ideas.
WGLT is all about community. In fact, 60% of our annual funding comes from local businesses, organizations, and donors just like you.
And WGLT reporters live in Bloomington Normal. They report on our community from a resident's perspective. Keep WGLT by and for the community with your financial support right now at WGLT.org.
WGLT is locally owned and operated. Let's break that down for a moment. Locally owned media is becoming increasingly rare. Why does that matter, you ask? Well, in much of the media today, the people who decide what you read and what you hear don't actually live where you do. As a result, less attention and resources are devoted to covering the issues you care about most.
The WGLT team lives here, and they're invested in this community. Our kids go to school here. We shop in the same stores. We eat in the same restaurants. This community investment is reflected in the news we cover and the stories we tell. We're able to remain locally focused and independent in our news coverage because of people like you who contribute. Keep WGLT community-focused and community-powered with your gift right now at WGLT.org.
WGLT's local news from around town is here for you each day. That's why you're listening to Sound Ideas right now, because you count on us for news. And we count on you, in return, for the individual financial support that pays for the news and programs that power your day. Any amount makes an impact. Give now at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Sarah Nardi. Miller Park Zoo in Bloomington has introduced a few new residents. The zoo has opened its Debraza monkey exhibit. It includes two of the white-bearded monkeys and two small antelopes called red-flanked duikers. Zoo Superintendent Jay Tetzloff tells Eric Stock the exhibit expands the zoo's collection of animals from Africa.
Two new species and two new animals that people can learn about and be engaged with. Seeing a Debraza monkey or a duiker through the glass, as we've seen on a few nights already, it's a lot of fun to watch.
Where does this new exhibit fit into the zoo's master plan to bring in new exhibits and bring in more visitors?
Yeah, it does both. This project has been on the master plan since the master plan was approved, and we had Debraza monkey picked out from the beginning to be the species in this what is really Africa. So we built the Greater Flamingo exhibit a couple years ago and kind of started the whole Africa theme. And so now we have our second exhibit from the master plan for Africa, and really is going to, what it does is it shows off where the zoo is going with more modern exhibits and more diverse and complex exhibits for our guests to see.
What makes it more modern?
It takes time and energy and resources to move the zoo forward. And I think we've got the ship moving in the right direction now. And as we have four projects going right now that, my first 5 years, we had zero. So the fact that we've got four at the same time is pretty remarkable.
So the modern nature of it is just in the volume of exhibits?
I would say in the quality of the exhibits. We don't have a lot of glass viewing. And, our new male, Debraza, who's been out for a couple of our special events, and he's not afraid to go up nose to nose with some of our guests that are here. So it's just a great opportunity for our guests to get engaged and interact with our animals.
So I guess it's sort of the intimacy, if you will, between zoo patrons and the animals that kind of moves it past that?
In essence, our guests are going to be able to get nose to nose with some of our animals. And the goal is for that engagement, that interaction, to engage our guests who want to do more, whether that's learning more about them on their own or reading more about here or doing something that saves them in the wild. You just never know what will spark that attention and interest to want to save that species.
How has the reopening from COVID impacted attendance at the zoo as we try to find more options to do things outside?
Our attendance right now is slightly down from 2019. So it's well up above 2020, but a little bit behind 2019. But the people, so we have a few less people coming to the zoo, but they're spending more money here. We're actually ahead when it comes to revenue. So That part's good, but we always want to get people out to the zoo, and we think there's a chance that people are waiting for this exhibit to open and get to see that firsthand.
What has the increased traffic compared to last year done for the mental health of the animals at the zoo?
Some of the animals don't really notice. They don't really pay attention to our guests. There's some who definitely will people watch. And I noticed it a lot more in the wintertime when we have less guests, that the people will watch somebody walk by or make eye contact with someone. So it varies from animal to animal. We have noticed our male Dobrazi monkey definitely does pay attention to our guests and who's around. So that's kind of exciting to see. And again, it's that interaction that we're excited about being able to truly show off here.
The city recently announced you were stepping back from your role as Director of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Arts to focus on your role as Zoo Superintendent, your original job here. City Manager Tim Gleason said in a statement, the zoo and Parks and Rec needed to be managed separately. Parks and Rec also includes the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. You had done both for 6 years. Was it too much to manage both?
It definitely was a challenge. It was supposed to be just a temporary thing with City Manager David Hales, and the conversation was, we'll reevaluate in a year or two. And, like you said, it was almost seven. So it was a lot to handle with the four projects here at the zoo, with the huge project that O'Neill Pool and Park is becoming and taking on the arena. It really was a lot. And I think the city manager was trying to help me and with many conversations we were having. And he says, it really is time to split these two jobs back up. And he gave me the choice whether to be the parks director or the zoo superintendent. And zoos are my passion. It's where I've started. This is my 34th year. And I just couldn't see myself not working at the zoo.
Does this enable you to do more at the zoo that you weren't able to do while wearing both hats?
Absolutely. The goal for me to I'll definitely have more hands-on here at the zoo than I was before. And the goal will also for me to go out, do a little bit more on the fundraising end and the community engagement piece, but also gives me a chance to kind of step back and be more visionary and think about the master plan and what is the future of the Miller Park Zoo.
That was Miller Park Zoo Superintendent Jay Tetzloff with Eric Stock. He says the zoo hopes to break ground on two more exhibits by next spring, and a new outdoor education theater is scheduled to be finished this year. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Sarah Nardi. You can find all our Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org. And you can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM. Or follow us on Twitter, we're all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.